This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in cardiovascular health. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally. Being proactive in maintaining nitric oxide levels is vital for healthful aging because an underperforming cardiovascular system will limit the effectiveness of any other supplementation in your regimen. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provides the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life for Berkeley Life nitric oxide supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla under some very special circumstances. Radio program at AOL.com is the way you can get questions to us. And invariably, there are going to be a lot of questions about COVID-19, the coronavirus epidemic. I am socially distancing from Layla. We're in different locales. You're in Queens?
I'm in Manhattan. Queens.
I think that's a suitable distance. That's more than 6 feet, so I think we're okay.
Right.
we're communicating through the marvels of Skype to bring you this episode and to answer your questions. How you doing, Layla? Everybody okay in your immediate vicinity?
Yeah, we're okay. We're good. We're, you know, hunkered down and getting used to a little cabin fever, and that's about it. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, and as you know, I just returned from Tortola. That was five days ago, and I'm self-quarantining because I came in via airliners. I'm actually consulting with patients online. Via Skype, and you know, we're having actually some very good appointments with patients because patients, I think, are in need of advice. We have one patient who I'm pretty certain before it was really acknowledged that America had a coronavirus problem, she had all the respiratory symptoms that are associated with coronavirus, and she's recovering.
Yes.
So that was interesting. And then we took care of a diabetic patient who really is in need of, I mean, the nice thing about it is that he's an attorney, and because he's less busy, this is really going to be an opportunity for him to turn things around because no distractions, you know, he can really focus on a low-carb diet. He can go to less congested areas and exercise. You know, I told him to aim for, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 steps per day.
And very important. Blood sugar, too.
For blood sugar control. And, you know, maybe this is, you know, a bit of a circuit breaker for him. You know, it is sort of a busy, harried criminal defense law lawyer has an opportunity to work from home and, you know, not perhaps be so susceptible to eating fast food on the run, you know, preparing food carefully, selecting ingredients. That was very gratifying. So, you know, people are sick. I had to talk to a friend of mine who's very sick with COVID virus. He's a gent who's, I guess he's pushing 60, but he had a very long, prolonged course. We managed to secure for him, some hydroxychloroquine and, azithromycin, which is
terrific.
The combo du jour for the disease. And, he's, you know, seems to be turning the corner. I've heard good anecdotal reports on that. There's a little bit of research on that. It's hopeful.
Yeah.
The president's mentioning it. Somewhat controversial because you know, it hasn't really been well substantiated in carefully conducted clinical trials, although some preliminary trials have shown promise.
Yes.
But, you know, it offers a ray of hope.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, I was diving in Tortola.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this whole thing was transpiring and we were watching long distance. The TV in my room didn't work. So I was relying on reports online and on radio. And I was spending a lot of time, you know, on the boat and underwater. And
a safe place underwater.
Very safe. I was socially distancing. There was a lot of people very apprehensive in Tortola. Some people wearing masks. And there were a lot of health advisories, a lot of hand washing and a lot of, disinfectant dispensers, but not a single case. But at a certain point, it got a little scary because, you know, have you ever been out on the water in a boat, you know, before a hurricane? You know, first there's a lot of boats and everybody's, you know, cool. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's very few boats, less and less boats.
Well, I've been out on a boat, but not shortly before a hurricane, no.
Yeah, but, you know, when like a squall or bad weather's coming in, is, you know, all the boats head for shore.
Oh, sure, sure.
And that's a little bit the feeling in Tortola as more and more tourists, you know, packed it in and got on a plane to get out of there. And they actually closed the borders to foreigners coming in. So, you know, the restaurateurs and hotel owners and dive shops kind of wistfully bid us adieu because they knew that their whole season was ruined, and there would be virtually no tourism for the next few months. So then, you know, the airports were busy with a lot of people wearing masks, kind of scary, but the planes were very empty, especially the plane that I took from San Juan, Puerto Rico to JFK. It was about one quarter full. And so, which was good because we managed to practice social distancing on the plane. You know, I got seats and there was nobody immediately around us. So our office is closed. We are encouraging people to get in touch with us by phone or Skype.
Yes. You could still call the office number and Grimaldi can schedule your appointment and you could have telephone appointments with us, Skype appointments with us. Now, the HIPAA rules have been relaxed for things like Skype. So
that's a great thing,
okay.
You know, because there is a little bit of a kind of a complicated procedure to use. You can't use just conventional Skype under ordinary circumstances. You have to go through a HIPAA secured site. But because of this emergency, a lot of patients need to get in touch with their health professionals who can't work, you know, only emergency personnel are really working, staffing the hospitals. In doctors who say, you know, your endocrinologist or your orthopedist, you know, is not really in the front lines of fighting coronavirus. They, you know, they're
nor your dentist,
right? Exactly. So, you know, my chiropractor called me the other day. He said, "I'm sorry." He said, "I have to close the office. There was somebody who we've come into contact with in the office, and you know, as a result, we're all self quarantining." So, that's the story.
Yeah. Okay. It's surreal.
Right. But you know, I have to say that you know, we're all in need of a routine.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm trying to maintain kind of a regular routine. I'm trying to, you know, get up early. Yes, there's a lot of TV watching, but I try to limit that because that's, you know, I think that's ultimately a little debilitating.
It can be, totally. It's good to structure your day. Yes, getting up early. This would really be the advice. Get up early. Get up at your usual time. Get ready. You know,
make your bed.
Run the errands.
Walk around in a house coat. You know, or in your PJs.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Don't spend the day in your PJs. It kind of messes with your morale.
I got a funny picture from a relative, you know, with a very young kid. He's a 4-year-old. Uh-huh. Actually, he's the 4-year-old who accompanied us to Tortola. Uh-huh. And, you know, his preschool is suspended. But it's such a cute picture because he wears a uniform for preschool. So he's at home. They had him dress up in his uniform and put on his backpack to go to his homeschooling lesson, you know, which is great structure for a kid. You know, it's like, okay, let's go to school. Like you're in the bedroom. Okay, come to school in the living room.
Yeah. It's a good idea. And I know myself here at home, I go from, you know, this desk, which is kind of in the living room, dining room area-ish, to the kitchen. I'll you know, take my laptop into the kitchen, and I kind of move around that way.
What do you have, about 6,000 square feet there in your sky-high penthouse apartment?
No,
that's not
sky-high penthouse? No, but yeah, about 1,000 square feet is right.
1,000. I said 6,000.
Yeah. No, not 6,000.
Right.
Anyway, it's good for people to have a routine. Yes. And, you know, fear. Can we talk about fear? It's not good for your health.
No.
It's not good for your health to be so anxious. And I would invite people to not spend so much time looking at some certain news programs that would have you believe that you will die next Tuesday.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, you have to relax, take this in your stride to the mm-hmm. degree that you can, and this too shall pass.
Right. And we're trying to provide a lot of information to people. I've been writing articles, and we've actually added an extra newsletter to our offerings. You know, people who subscribe at drhoffman.com, and you can go on Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, we put up we've done some great interviews. I did a great interview with Dr. Leo Gallant, who's one of the foremost integrative physicians, who I consider a mentor and just a really careful, deliberate guy who has looked at both the convention. I mean, he's looked at the condition itself to mm-hmm. help interpret the facts for his patients in a very, I think, scholarly way. And also, he's looked at the supplements and the implication of various supplements. And, you know, we can make certain assumptions about things that are good for colds and flus. And we can extrapolate to COVID-19, but it's not, we really have to be rigorous about this. We have to really make sure that we understand the unique properties of the coronavirus so that we can properly address it and not inadvertently do harm. You know, there actually may be some potential downsides to the routine use of certain supplements. There's some controversy, for example, about elderberry. Elderberry is great for immunity. But mm-hmm. if you go into, like, the real heavy-duty symptoms and kind of a meltdown that's associated with cytokine storm, elderberry may actually be something that's pro-inflammatory under those circumstances. Generally, it's fine, you know, and you can take it for prevention, no problem. But, you know, it's kind of like when to hold, when to fold. We're beginning to understand that better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've done some podcasts on just the general subject. We've done a podcast on probiotics in relationship to this. We're going to do some future podcasts in relationship to the psychological ramifications of this with the psychologist. You know, we've got a lot in store for you. So, we got a captive audience here. And, you know, if you want
to catch up on your podcasts, right?
So, you know, if you, you know, between watching the news, you know, taking your ukulele lessons, you know, learning Swahili or whatever, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, all those things that you sort of put off.
You know, write that book that you didn't have time to write before. Mm-hmm. Now you have time.
Rearrange your sock drawer, you know, that thing.
Projects.
Yeah. Projects. I think projects are important. Let's make it a constructive thing. Let's say, you know, look, life is so busy. There's so many things that don't get attended to around the house. You know, take a mm-hmm. look at your wardrobe, for example. Do you need all those clothes? Maybe there's some things that you can simply excess and you can declutter during mm-hmm. this time. You know, I know it's, for me, it's kind of a dread process. I feel like I need to drink a couple of cups of, you know, extra strong coffee to focus my brain on this. But, you know, in the process of researching things, I got like piles and piles and piles of papers. Do I need them all? Can I consolidate that? I've got more time now to do that because the daily pressure is off. What about exercise? What do you do on the exercise front? You know, we're supposed to, you know, shelter in place, that whole concept.
Yeah. Well, listen, it could be anything from, hey, if you've got an exercise mat at home, a yoga mat, there are certainly functional exercises you could do at home. You don't need to go to a gym. You don't even need to go outside.
Right.
You know, get on the floor and do some push-ups. Do some burpees.
I've made a practice of trying to do 90 push-ups a day.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm going to look pretty buff when I when you see me in the office next.
If I see you, you're going to be ripped.
Yeah. Plus, you know, 300 crunches, and you know, these are the things you could do on your own.
Yeah. And I think it's important to practice some extreme self-nurture and nourishment. You can make big pots of soup and stew. You can get ready for when the lockdown isn't so harsh anymore. Right. Prepared lots of foods in advance and freeze them, put them in single serving containers.
Like,
do all
like,
kinds of planning that way.
Like chicken soup. Jewish hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
You know, Jewish penicillin? It's like we're updating
Jewish
that.
Jewish penicillin, right.
No, we're updating it for this epidemic. It's Jewish hydroxychloroquine. Great. Okay, so do we have any questions? By the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. We're going to try and do this once a week. If the questions demand it, we'll do it more. Send your questions. We'll address them. And they don't help. By the way, life goes on, and there may be questions related to other health problems because, you know, during the course of a month or two, when we're all locked down around COVID-19, other health problems may emerge, and we want to address those too. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. We do, however, have a few questions on coronavirus, Dr. Hoffman.
Yep.
We've got one from Karen. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, can coronavirus be transmitted via food or food preparation?
That's an excellent question. And initially, I would have dismissed that possibility because there are airborne viruses and then there are what are called enteroviruses, which are gastrointestinal viruses.
Yeah.
Examples of which are, you know, hepatitis A, the shipborne virus that afflicts so many.
Norovirus,
which is very contagious. Actually, more contagious than this. It just spreads rampantly.
Known to happen on cruise ships, right?
Yeah, known to happen on cruise ships. And also daycare and, settings where there's a lot of, touching and, kids are careless with that. So the answer is, however, a more nuanced answer is that it may be possible for it to be transmitted orally through the oral route. And the reason we think that, first of all, there's no proof that that's the case. There's no documented cases. And I'm pretty sure that it would be unethical to say, okay, can we have some volunteers for this experiment? We have some coronavirus
Let's see if you get coronavirus.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure. How we're going to research this, but it has been demonstrated that coronavirus is present in the stool in some patients and for quite some time after they resolve their initial infection.
Yeah.
So, that should be taken care of with, hand washing and avoidance of food sharing. Right.
Yes. Good idea, using
your unique toothbrush and utensils, as you might do for the common cold.
Okay, I just want to know that nobody's sharing a toothbrush. That just should not happen, coronavirus or not. It's just not a good idea.
Exactly. but it's in that sort of fugue state that we're in when we're in the bathroom and we reach for a toothbrush, it can happen.
It can happen. Yeah,
or, Or it's like, hey, can I borrow your toothbrush?
You can keep it.
Right. Right.
Okay. So no way to really know whether it's transmitted via food.
Theoretically possible from an actual standpoint, I doubt it. I mean, in other words, a lot of people get takeout food. I mean, are you going to get it from the food? I really kind of doubt it.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Karen, thank you for that very thoughtful question. We have another one from Jerry. In the fight against coronavirus, would an atomized spray of colloidal silver, clear, sprayed into the nose help to kill the virus? You talked about this on Saturday, on your Saturday radio show.
And I'll reiterate I think that colloidal silver has some disinfectant properties, but I really don't think it can be thought to either prevent or treat coronavirus, either taking it orally or nebulizing it in your lungs or spraying it up your nostrils. In fact, the FTC has cracked down on some audacious claims made by some manufacturers of colloidal silver that reference viral diseases, you know, with the, and there is a little bit of a cult of people taking colloidal silver as a shield against COVID-19. And I think there's absolutely no proof or substantiation that that's going to work.
Yeah.
Colloidal silver is something that's really quite old. It, you know, before the antibiotic era, silver solutions were used to treat wounds.
Yeah.
And they have a potential. They're even used, silver solutions are used to treat burn victims to prevent them from getting infections. And I don't know if this is still current practice, but a silver solution used to be instilled into the eyes of babies who are born routinely. It was the law because it wasn't known whether the mother was a carrier of gonorrhea. And, you know, if you go through the birth canal and your mother has gonorrhea, you can go blind. So, they, you know, this is a, an old practice. So silver has some properties that, by the way, gonorrhea is a spirochete or, you know, part of the bacterial family, not a virus. So the answer is no. It has to clear. I'm personally using clear.
Clear, because, which is xylitol, right?
Yeah, what it does, I think it facilitates, you know, clearance of nasal pathogens. I don't think it's antiviral. It's certainly antibacterial. So I think
breaks up biofilms that the bacteria surround themselves in.
I went diving and I have a tendency to get a nosebleed, you know, when I dive, just the pressure changes. It's a little capillaries burst. And, you know, I brought my clear down there and I was using it, and it really helped, keep my sinuses, clean and clear. You know, I use it preventively. But that's more to prevent sinusitis, which is, you know, maybe initially a viral infection, but ultimately becomes a bacterial infection. I think it's more going to work against bacteria. So there you have it.
Right, right. We've got a third question from Deanne about coronavirus again, but actually it's related to. She's actually referring to Spanish flu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the use of NSAIDs.
Yeah.
And supposedly that NSAIDs can be a detriment when trying to fight a virus, and that isn't it true? Isn't it a fact that the aspirin taken during Spanish flu caused more damage than the virus itself?
Well, there's several issues that brings up. One is that there was a kind of a viral rumor, you know, there's many things that are viral, especially information. And sometimes disinformation, that taking Advil or ibuprofen was highly discouraged if you had coronavirus. That actually, the World Health Organization has come out with a position paper that is really not substantiated. However, and we'll get to the aspirin in a minute, it is true that a fever is the body's natural defense. And I tend to encourage my patients to, and myself when I'm sick, to kind of grin and bear it. And unless you are absolutely, you know, feeling really horrible and your temperature exceeds 101.5, I suggest you don't use any kind of what's called a febrifuge or a fever-reducing agent, like Tylenol. Tylenol will do it, too.
Yeah.
Or ibuprofen.
And that's not an NSAID, right.
Right, and that's a non-NSAID, because you allow the body to conduct its natural defenses. And by the way, viruses are less viable at high temperatures. So that's actually the basis of a treatment called hyperthermia, where you heat the body.
Yes.
Now, as to the aspirin thing, that's a different thing. Aspirin is actually an anti-inflammatory, but it's not an NSAID, really. It's in a category of its own. Aspirin was used because aspirin was novel then. Aspirin had only been around for, I don't know, 20, 30 years at that time, and it was thought to be a miracle drug. And people had high fevers, and so they gave them aspirin, but they gave them aspirin at doses that are astronomical. Most aspirin, you know, the baby aspirin, so-called, it's 99 milligrams. And then a standard dose of aspirin is 325 milligrams. They were giving people like 10,000 milligrams of aspirin at that time. And that may have caused gastrointestinal bleeding.
Sure.
You know, not good. You know, I think, if given a choice, I would probably take Tylenol. But here's another thing about Tylenol. When you're not eating, when you take a lot of Tylenol, you deplete your glutathione, and glutathione is necessary for defense. And so I would make sure I have NAC handy if I'm taking Tylenol.
Yeah.
Because NAC kind of antidotes the glutathione depleting effects of Tylenol. In fact, NAC is used to treat Tylenol poisoning.
Yes.
You know, you can actually require a liver transplant. You can develop fulminant liver failure if you take a lot of Tylenol. Say, like in a suicidal gesture, you know, somebody will say, I'm going to kill myself, but I'm sort of half-hearted about it. I'm going to take 20 Tylenols.
Oof.
Well, 20 Tylenols, it doesn't seem like much, but you can actually go into liver
damage.
Failure. You go to the hospital, and I've seen it done. They put an NG tube down your throat.
Mm-hmm.
They pump your stomach, but then they push down the NG tube, concentrated N-acetylcysteine. They call it Mucormist, is the medical name for that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they save lives. They, you know, people don't end up having fulminant liver failure.
Yeah.
So there you go. You want to take a couple of Advil, fine, but, It becomes sort of an urban myth, and I don't think it's well substantiated. Maybe they need to do more research on this, but so far so good on that.
Okay.
So let's continue answering questions, dispelling misconceptions, and our destination for questions, radio program at AOL.com. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, obviously dominated by the current concern with COVID-19, the infection that's caused by the coronavirus. This is Telligent Medicine. We'll be right back.